Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody. We are on the air. This is Family Matters. Welcome. I am Jill Ajizi, and of course, the lovely Judge Michelle Arantz is here with me. Hello, Michelle.
Hi, everybody, and thank you for joining us. Hi, Jill.
How are you doing, Michelle?
Great.
You are?
Yeah.
I'm glad, because here in central Illinois, we have tornado warnings. It goes from 30 to 60 within 2 hours, and it's pouring down rain right now.
Well, except for the dangerousness of extreme weather, that's what I'm doing right. I love extreme weather.
You do. That surprised me about you. You always are on the edge.
Well, it's real dark up here, so it's
real
kind
dark.
Of people are quiet and they're stiller.
Yeah. I want to talk about a little bit before we get into the show, some things that are going on. Parental Alienation Awareness Organization, USA, and KidsNeedBoth.org, which is a not-for-profit in Lakeland, Florida. And that is run by our Florida chapter manager, Danica Fields. And you know Danica from coming to the first Chicago conference that we did, Michelle.
Oh, for sure.
Everything. And she does such a great job. She was an alienated mom and now is back with her kids and has a great relationship with her ex, and she's doing wonderful things down in Florida. But she has decided to help me with this conference down in Lakeland. So on November 16th and 17th, we're doing a conference for CEs and CLEs in Florida, Lakeland, Florida. And we'll have, of course, the illustrious attorney Brian Ludmer coming down from Canada, who is an expert on parental alienation, everything having to do with parental alienation, and he has experienced it firsthand and is just amazing in his technique and his questioning. And last year in Canada returned 33 children to target parents in one way or another, which is an amazing result. It's such a great result there in Canada, and is doing consulting here in the U.S. So he'll be there along with Dr. Mike Bone and Dr. Bob Evans. And everybody's going to have a great day of learning about all of the things you need to know if you're being affected by parental alienation, if you're a mental health, legal professional, or a parent educator. We're excited. Little Nietzsche in the background.
Well, sorry. Go ahead.
So I'm excited about that event. If you want to be a part of that event, and there is an advocacy training the next day, so if you want to be part of that two-day event, it's very, very inexpensive for parents to attend, $40, and it's a little more for professionals. But go to kidsneedboth.org. The flyer is there. I recorded a PSA on it the other day. That's out there for you to get to your local radio station. So love to have you participate, and we want a full house, just like we had in Chicago with a sold-out conference. So that's all I have to say about that. Things are moving along nicely with Parental Alienation Awareness Organization chapters. Things are happening, Michelle, and I see it every day. Differences are being made, and advocates are out there working very hard. So that's exciting.
Yeah, and we have, you know, because we do have a lot of lawyers who do tune in, I want to just add on to that. If you're a lawyer, as well as somebody who's struggling, Brian Ludmer is probably the greatest resource for everybody, but especially for lawyers who really don't have a grip on how to handle these cases. So I just want to emphasize that, because I myself learned more from him about, I don't know what, between you and him, I really rather say that, but it's an extraordinary opportunity. So if you're stuck or confounded, you should go hear him talk.
And if you need to get a hold of him, it's brian@ludmerlaw.com, L-U-D-M-E-R, and he's a terrific, terrific guy. I know he's immersed in his own trial this week after 11 years of trying to get through it, and so he's working on getting that done and moving on with his life and trying to represent people all over the world and help them out. So enough about that, because we have decided that we need to broaden our horizons. And what we'd like to do. And Michelle, I'm going to let you talk about what our goals are for this show, because this was born out of a need for parental alienation education and awareness. And I think we have really achieved that goal over the last, it's been 2 years. Can you believe that?
I do believe that.
It's just amazing that we've been doing this and getting the word out, and the shows are everywhere. And if I look at the numbers of downloads on our shows and live listens, it's incredible, the people that have heard us worldwide, because technology is such that we can do that now. And so I want to let you talk a little bit about what you're thinking.
Well, over the last 2 years, we've had so many requests from all kinds of parents, including the alienated parents, to talk more about the divorcing process, to talk more about parenting in general, families in general. And we hear this, and we get requests all the time. So tonight we're going to start, and we are going to keep mixing it up, and parental alienation is our primary focus. But tonight we're going to talk a little bit broader about divorce.
We are. And what I want to do is get to our guest. I stumbled across Kathy Meyer, who is with us tonight, one day, and I am so glad that I did, and I've been so excited about this show since I found her. And I love the way that she introduces herself on her website, which is KathyWMeyer.com. You know, she says, here's the official me. And the official me is that Kathy is a master certified relationship coach. So she is dealing with divorce it from every angle, from the beginning, before people are even thinking about it, she's talking to them, and in the midst of it and after, and she's all about divorce. She has an online magazine, which I'm going to let her tell us about, as well as a couple of products and ebooks, just like we have, Michelle, in Parental Alienation 911. She has When to Divorce, Are Your Marital Problems Fixable, or Is Divorce the Solution? And then How to Get a Divorce, An Expert's Guide to Navigating the Divorce Process. The other part of Kathy is the just Kathy, the everyday girl who's out there trying to make a difference and telling people who she really is. And I want her to tell us why she's doing what she's doing, and about the human Kathy and not the working Kathy. So welcome, Kathy. How are you?
I'm great. It's nice to be here. Hello, ladies.
Hello.
And Kathy.
Why don't you tell us, Kathy, a little bit just about you and about the real Kathy.
The real Kathy. The real Kathy is a little bit boring. I'm consumed with my work. I went through my own divorce, which was an unwanted divorce. Mm-hmm. And it took me about a year and a half to get to the point that I could wake up every morning being grateful that he left. Because it set me on a path that I had never envisioned for myself. I was a homemaker, a mother, a dependent wife. I never thought of myself as a career woman owning my own business. And here I am, and I love every day of it. So I feel very lucky to be in the position I'm in, because I meet extraordinary people and I help extraordinary people. So, you know, I have my children, I have my dogs, I have friends and family, I have a full life. But I think the foundation is what I was blessed to be able to choose to do as a career.
I think that's so interesting that you say that, because I had a long conversation with a lady from here in Springfield, Illinois today, who started working at a not-for-profit that I've been on the board of for 18 years. And I said, well, what are you doing there? How did you end up there? Because I knew her in a previous life. And she said, you know, I got divorced. I was staying at home with my kids. I didn't finish my education, and I didn't know what to do. And
right.
She said, I never imagined that I would be doing what I'm doing now, which is running a shredding business that we have for this not-for-profit that employs disabled people. She's going back to school, working on her bachelor's degree and going on for her master's, parenting her children, not living in the country club aura that she had been in before, but living near a park in a small bungalow, loving what she's doing. And she said, you don't need all the stuff you had before, and I'm reinventing who I am, and I love it.
Exactly. My ex-husband was a Air Force colonel. My life that I live today is so far removed from what I was living, and that was the life I had chosen for myself. It's what I thought I wanted. And I remember 4 months after he left, and I was just devastated, and I was laying in bed one morning and just had this light bulb moment that I, for the first time in my life, I was an adult. I could choose to do anything I wanted to, be anyone I wanted to. And I just felt this surge of energy, you know, this motivation to get out and be productive. And that's where it started. And
so how did you tell your children that you were going to get a divorce? How did you go about it? And have you learned differently since then?
Well, I didn't play a role in telling my children. My ex told my children. And mine is a strange story. I had no idea he was unhappy. I had no idea he wanted a divorce. We were getting ready to go to church one Sunday morning. We had had an argument, and we didn't have big blowout arguments, you know. We communicated during our arguments, but he was upset with me, and he said, I'm going, he picked up his car keys, and he said, I will meet you at church. I'm going to get a Coke. He never came home again.
Wow, that's a version of the cigarette story, huh?
Uh-huh, he went to get a pack of cigarettes, yeah.
When did
but
you
he
hear?
Never.
You mean he never came home again? He had already a place where he moved out to?
He went to stay with friends. And he told me when he left that day that he had no idea he was never coming back. And that was 14 years ago, and he has probably spoken 50 words to me in that period.
Mm. Well, how would you, if you were coaching somebody, because I know you have a coaching business, how to handle that situation with their children, what would you tell that mom about? How do you tell them? What do you do?
In a situation like that, where someone snaps and they're just gone, I think it's up to the parent that's left at home to immediately sit down and discuss what's going on with the children. Because you can't wait to see what he's going to do. Because if he's behaving irrationally, and he does have the opportunity to tell the children, what is he going to tell them? Is he going to upset them? My ex-husband, I didn't know what to do. I thought, okay, he's upset. He'll be back in a few days. This was on a Friday that he left, a Sunday. I thought, he'll be back in a few days. Well, he didn't come back that night. The next day, about midday, I heard his car pull into the driveway. And then I heard him leave, and I knew the moment I heard it. It was my youngest son was screaming in the driveway. He had gone to our children's school and checked him out of school, put him in the back of his car, told them he was leaving and never coming home again.
Mm.
And then he dropped them off in the driveway and left them.
Well, there's a lot of abandoned children, and I'm always interested, and I know this is something you're interested in as well, is what does the remaining parent tell children who get either abandoned one way or the other? He may have showed up for them later. But what do you say?
You have to be very careful what you say, because that child, if that child is truly abandoned, they're left with one parent. They're left with one parent that they can put all their faith and trust in. So you don't want to lie to a child. And what you say to them really will depend on the child's age. But I tell my children, you know, your dad's going through something right now. We have to give him a little space and time, and we'll pray for him and call him every day and see what happens. But I'm here for you. Your grandparents are here for you. And you have to go on as normally as possible with life for the sake of your children. And the first thing I did was get him into therapy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, within the next day, we were in a therapist's office because I knew this was a situation that I needed professional help with for their sake and mine.
And how long were they in therapy for?
Two and a half, 3 years.
Because what do you think? What did that do for them?
It was very helpful for my older son. He had a therapist that he became, you know, he developed a good bond with. And he would communicate with his father in emails and everything, and he would discuss these emails with the therapist. And it gave him a male figure to talk to that he trusted and kept him from having to come to mom with everything.
Did your children blame themselves for their father leaving?
No. No, not once. That was one of the first things that came into my mind is I have to let them know this is not about them.
So what are the takeaways to parents about one of the greatest struggles, and in my mind, Kathy, the most important conversation you will ever have with your child is the one where you tell them about the divorce, and there's no amount of rehearsal or prep or research, which is too much, because you got to know their age, their developmental stage. Do you tell them individually? What are your opinions about the top five things that a parent should know when they're having that talk with their children?
The most important thing a parent has to be able to do is put their child's needs first, during that conversation, be willing to answer any question, regardless of how uncomfortable it is. Be willing to do it together as a couple, because that unity as a couple is going to continue on, or should continue on, after the divorce for the sake of the children. And I believe in, regardless of what age, if you've got four children, sit four children down and tell them at the same time. Because those children are going to need mom and dad as support, and they're going to need each other as support. So they all need to hear the same story.
But the story is going to be very different for a 3-year-old than a 13-year-old, no? Isn't there more you're going to tell a 13-year-old than a 3-year-old?
I don't believe that children need to know everything. And I think after that initial conversation, it's a great idea to spend separate time with each one of them. And then, because each one is going to have questions that are appropriate for their age.
Sure.
And then you're going to be able to answer those questions in an age-appropriate way. But I think it's very important because, you know, what do? You've got four children and you sit them down one at a time and you say, okay, you I've just told you this terrible news. Now you go to your bedroom and sit there with it while I tell your brother.
Mm. Well, Kathy, you know, you have made a really successful business out of this. And unfortunately, there have to be people like you and like me and Michelle doing what we're doing to try to educate and create awareness for all of these issues. And I saw some just really striking numbers on one of your blogs, and I just want to read this quickly. In 1919, 1 in 10 marriages ended in divorce. In 1948, that number increased to 1 in 4. By 1970, 2 in 5, or 40% of marriages ended in divorce. Today, 2012, the lifelong probability of a marriage ending in divorce is between 40 and 50%. Why the increase, do you think? I mean, other than, is it because relationships have become expendable? Is it easier because of the laws to get a divorce? Are people being raised differently that they see that they can get out of situations much quicker and easier than they did before in our parents' world? What do you attribute it to?
I think it's because marriage today is romanticized. My grandparents married for completely different reasons than a couple marries for today. When my grandmother married, she didn't put a whole lot of thought into the white wedding gown, you know. She went out to meet a man. She had a purpose. I want to meet a man who's going to be a good man, good husband, good father. She put some effort into it because she knew she was going to spend the rest of her life with it. Today, we fall in love.
Mm-hmm.
And when that love starts to transition into something more comfortable but less thrilling, we want to fall in love again. We're addicted to that, the butterflies and the rush, the infatuation.
Chemicals.
Mm-hmm.
Chemicals. Oh, yeah, we love those chemicals. And people, I've heard people say we're quitters. I don't think it's that we are quitters. I think if you get lucky and you find someone who gives you those butterflies and you have that, you know, that chemistry with them, that marriage is going to last. But in this day and age, it isn't about the chemicals. It's about that feeling, that feel good. We live in a society that's so stressed out economically, you know, emotionally. We're stressed out. So when we attach ourselves to someone who makes us feel just fantastic, it's kind of medication for what we deal with in everyday life. And when the bloom is off the rose and it's not there to shore us up, we go looking, not necessarily go looking for the other one, but it's divorce, and I want to find that feeling again.
They say that the studies show that limerence, which is what they call that fire in the fingers can't get enough of you,
mm-hmm.
it lasts 18 months. And then after 18 months, you've got to figure out whether you've got a basis for real connection and friendship.
Right.
But we
exactly.
devote our entire lives trying to find those 18-month shots.
Exactly. And a lot of couples, when it starts wearing off after that year and a half, 2 year period, they'll think, well, maybe if we have a baby, it'll come back. Mm-hmm. You know, let's introduce a child into the mix. That's more magic. And they have a baby, and then they have another baby, and they find out that just only adds more stress and more conflict. And the next thing you know, someone's at an attorney's office and they're in divorce court.
Have you had couples come to you, Kathy, and actually say that? If we have a baby and introduce children into this conflict, it's going to make us better?
Yes.
but it's a crazy thought, though. If you think about it, if the limerence is 18 months, and then afterwards, what are you going to do? What if it is, well, that's not here. Maybe a good thing to tie us together, to play out some meaning in our lives, is to have a child. It's not a crazy option. As a matter of fact, biologically, it makes a lot of sense. Because I think that the nature's hors d'oeuvres, the come on and the excitement, is just for the purpose of procreating in a lot of our species. So
exactly.
That's what it's there for.
That's what it is. That's what it's there for. If you use it in that manner. But if you're using procreation in an attempt to ignite the flames again, you're going to be sorely disappointed because that's not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
but
nothing,
I'm saying that we can't indict people for doing what is, you know, there's some sense to it is all I mean. And then,
well, yeah,
it brings me to the question, which I've really been looking forward to talking to you about, is the second marriages. And the second marriages, the rate is really higher than the first marriages. And I'd like to ask you about the reasons for that. Certainly based on what we've just been talking about, I get that. But what's your opinion about that?
People don't like to be alone. And men remarry more often and quicker after divorce than women do. But if you don't take time after divorce to examine and deal with what went wrong in the first marriage, then you're just shifting the problems you had in the first marriage on to a new partner.
And why do men reconnect faster?
Pardon? I didn't hear you.
Why do men reconnect faster?
I don't know. I've never read a study that said why, you know, but I have opinions.
Yeah.
I think men, women are better at being alone. If a man has been in a 15 to 20 year marriage with a stay-at-home wife or a woman who came home and cooked dinner and, you know, they get adjusted to that. That's what they want in their life. They want to be loved and taken care of. We all do. But men seem to fall prey to that need in a stronger way than women do.
You can kind of liken it to the personality that of a dog and a cat. You know, men are like dogs,
right,
and women are like cats.
Women are like cats. Yeah. And but it's astonishing to me because I will work with clients or get emails from people who are going through a divorce, and they say, well, when can I start dating? You know, you've not even seen the judge, and you're wondering when you can start dating. That drive to partner up again is so strong. And, you know, if you...
And to get out of pain and to get a little anesthetic.
Well, that's it. It's a relief. If you're attached to someone else and thinking about them and doing things with them, you don't have to think about what you just left behind, and you can bury all that pain.
And isn't it really a quest to find that feeling again?
To find that feeling again. I want to be in love.
Ugh.
My father used to say to me when I was younger, you're in love with love. I went through, I had a few relationships that were just ridiculous, and he saw it. I didn't. But I can remember him telling me, you're in love with love. You're not in love with that man. You're in love with loving that man.
Well, you know,
go
ahead.
But that's the problem with society. We want to be in love. We see it in Hollywood. We see it in the movies. You know, you see it on Honey Boo Boo. Everybody wants to be in love. Like love is going to cure all of our problems.
Well, let's talk about, Kathy, when there are children involved, whether it's through a blended family with stepchildren or if children have been introduced into a relationship to try to fix what's gone wrong. What do you do with children after divorce and one thing I remember from Michelle's book, The Good Karma Divorce, is children are not resilient through divorce, and there are so many people after divorce who think, my kids are going to be okay. They have damage, and if it leads to visitation interference or parental alienation, we know that damage is long-lasting and devastating. So how do you work through the children and you trying to reinvent yourself and making a new life for yourself and maybe introducing a love interest? How does all that work for the kids?
It works slowly. You have to be willing to take your time. Things are not going to happen quickly after a divorce because you have children. You have to be willing to spend at least 6 months to a year focused only on your children. If you want to reinvent yourself, you know, do it on your own time, in your spare time. But children come first, and their well-being come first, because what is happening to them will impact the rest of their lives. And it's, you know, we all deserve happiness, but not at the expense of our children's emotional well-being.
I like to talk about a subject that people don't talk about too much or enough. One of the primary causes, if not the main cause, according to some studies, for divorce and second marriages is stepchildren.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very tricky. And I'd love to hear what you think are some of the rules for parents who become step-parents. And why is it such a big problem?
It's a big problem because parents give their children too much authority. Or that's my opinion.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Yeah, everyone I've ever worked with, I've been astonished that there's some 14-year-old in the background running the show.
Well, there's a reason, and the word is guilt.
It's guilt. It really is guilt. But whether it's your first marriage, second marriage, or third marriage, the relationship is between you and your partner, husband and wife. If that relationship is not strong, that family is not going to survive. And for that relationship to be strong, you both need to be the ones with the power. You know, there has to be respect and kindness and consideration for the children's needs, but there needs to be an understanding that the buck stops here. Mom and dad are running the show, and a lot of people just are not willing to do that. This divorce court, you said that to my son, I'm divorcing you, and I'll say go again.
Well, how do you know when you're getting married what that person's priorities are going to be, whether or not they're going to be able to set boundaries? What do you look for? Because
the only way to know is have a nice, long, extended relationship with someone before you jump into marriage with them. Have deep conversations. Make long lists of your expectations of each other. Leave no stone unturned. Because if you're going to bring another person into your children's lives, you need to know that that's the person you want to bring into your children's lives. You can't date someone for 6 months and marry them, move in together, and things are going to be wonderful, because you don't know that person in 6 months.
So how do you treat a stepchild if you're a new step-parent? Are there some guidelines?
Well, sure, there are guidelines, but the guidelines would have to be set between the parents.
Like what would be one of the things that you suggest
physical,
to parents?
You know, any kind of discipline. Who's in charge of the discipline? And, of course, a stepmother, if she's alone with children while dad's out at a business meeting in the evening and the stepchildren act up, she has to know what her boundaries are. This has to be discussed between the parents before that situation ever comes up. Okay, do I send him to his room? Those kind of things. You know, no physical hitting, but you can send him to his room. You can take his iPod away. That stepmother or stepfather has to have that kind of authority, respectful authority over the stepchild. And if you allow that stepparent to have that authority, then the child's going to follow the lead. You know, they're going to eventually learn that they can't manipulate the situation. My father's not going to move from this. He's demanding that I respect my stepmother. And as long as the stepmother is respecting the children, then she has earned their respect.
And then there's that's the healthy way. And then there's the reality. If you want the marriage, you got to stay out of their business. They've got to, like a father and daughter, mother and son, father, mother and daughter, and you're the third person, you're the new person, and it's really hard not to put your two cents in. But
right.
If you're
you
in
stay out of their business.
Lots of fights, you got to get out of the fire. You got to get out of the
right.
mix. And do you agree?
I totally and completely agree, especially in situations where there's an ex-wife out there.
Yeah. I always said I had to live with through my first marriage with a deceased wife, and I almost wish sometimes that I had an ex-wife, because it was so hard to live with the memory of a saint.
Oh,
that
yes.
I had a very difficult time with that. And although when I took these children as my own at 2 years and 9 months, they didn't know their mother, but it was always there looming over. So I almost wish that I had a physical being to deal with instead of a ghost.
Well, yeah, because it's that, you know, they can build up these ideas in their head of what their real mother would have been like if she was still around, and you know she would have been a saint. And
yeah.
You can't compete against that.
Right.
So if you've got the angry ex-wife who's telling the children, you don't have to listen to her. And then they come stay the weekend at the house or spend their week at the house. My mom said, I don't have to listen to you. What do you do in a situation like that? You have to step back and let your husband deal with it between his ex-wife and his child.
Do you think, Kathy, in an ideal situation, that before you introduce the children to the new love, that you get some therapeutic assistance and maybe do it in a therapeutic setting?
I think that depends on the situation. If you are dealing with children who are having problems about the divorce, then, yeah, ideally you're going to work with a third party who's objective and kind of smooth things over for you. If you've been divorced a while, your children have adjusted and they're, you know, emotionally healthy, and I think it's if you're conscientious, it's something you can do on your own.
I just meant ideally, because I don't know the child who's really okay with it.
Well, I haven't met a child yet that's really okay with it.
That's what I mean.
I've met a few who say they are okay with it, but their behaviors tell me they're not,
mm-hmm.
you know. But
right, they want to please their parent. They don't want to risk losing that parent by saying, I don't like your new girlfriend.
Right. Or they're angry and don't care who they hurt. You know, they're staying out all night, they're doing drugs, they're drinking, but it didn't bother them that their parents got divorced.
I think you don't bring my opinion, and it's tempered by the fact that I understand that everybody wants that distraction and, you know, those chemicals to make you feel better when you're going through the most painful thing in the world. It's completely understandable, but I think you don't bring a new person into the relationship until your relationship with your ex has reached heart money, meaning your heart's healed a little and you've solved the money.
I wholly agree. Children should not have, they should not be witness to a revolving door of boyfriends and girlfriends and lovers and overnights, and no, you don't do that to your children. You don't go out and date someone for a month and say, oh, I'm in love, and bring him home to meet the children. That's setting your children up for devastation, one rejection after another. Why would you want your children to become attached with someone unless you're 100% sure, are as sure as you can be that person is going to be there.
Right.
Kathy, when you have a couple come in for your relationship counseling, and And you've been with them. I mean, I assume it takes a long time to evaluate where they are. I mean, how long would you say you would have a couple in your office for how many sessions before you can evaluate what their next step might be?
Normally between 3 and 6 months.
Okay. So when you get to that point, when you see that there is no hope of reconciliation and that there is a deal breaker in that marriage and it's time for divorce, how do you, what terms do you put that in? Do you just say it right out and let them know and say, you two need to go on your way? I don't think you can fix this.
No, I've never said that to anyone.
Great.
I've never said that to anyone. I'm not, you know, people think I'm a divorce encourager. You know, I'm not. I don't encourage anyone to divorce. I will tell people that I can't tell you what to do. You have to make this decision on your own. And a lot of couples will come to me wanting me to tell them it's time to give it up, it's time to quit. You know, and I work with couples to try to help them find solutions to the problems they're having in their marriage. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, because one or either party has already shut down and is not interested mm-hmm. in a solution. But it's not my place to tell a couple that their marriage is over.
But I mean, how do you know? Is I think what Jill meant is, how do you know when it's circling the drain?
Oh, well, I know. I know. I can pretty much tell within 4 or 5 sessions whether there's any hope. But I will work with a couple as long as they feel the need to try. I will continue to work with a couple.
You know, I have heard, and it is a profound thing, and it's kind of my belief that the word, when this word happens, there's almost no way to reverse it. And that word is when people have contempt for each other. I think that's a difficult one, even for a therapist.
Well, yes.
So
there are a lot of difficult situations. But
what about those couples? And everybody who has anything to do with this field has a different opinion, and I'm interested in yours. What about the idea of staying together for the sake of the children? How do you weigh in on that?
Oh, I'm all for it. If the marriage is low conflict, if there's no domestic violence, if a couple gets along, oh, we've fallen out of love. We like each other. He's my best friend. You know, we get along. We go out. We do things. I encourage them to stay together for the sake of the children.
Until the last one's 18?
Yeah. But here's my thinking along those lines. Marriages change. They go through periods of change. When I was a young child, my parents thought about divorce. We separated. My sister and I cried. You know, they took us 2 hours away to a psychiatrist because we were so emotionally distraught, and they decided not to divorce because they couldn't stand what they were seeing us go through. They ended up staying together and being married for 54 years
mm-hmm.
and so in love with each other after that rocky period. You know, when they put my father's hospice bed in the bedroom, they were going to put it across the room from my mother's, from the marital bed, and he said, no, right next to her. If I want to reach out in the night and touch her, I wouldn't be able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And these were the people who stayed together for the sake of the children.
But then they came to like each other again?
Oh, yeah, they fell in love again.
Yeah. Oh, my. That's really important to know. So you believe, I'm asking you, you believe that you can completely fall out of love and fall back in love?
Yes.
whatever love is. You know, I mean, I think it's something you have to work at every single day. It's not that feeling is something you have to nurture and develop every day, I think.
I am working with a client right now, an author, Suzanne Vinker.
And she's going to be on our show November 14th.
Wonderful. You will love her. And her book is extraordinary, How to Choose a Husband and Make Peace with Marriage. But she says in this book, the moment you put on that wedding ring, you have to make the choice every day to love your husband. And it is about making a choice. And I'm not talking about loving someone who comes home drunk every night. You know, there are situations where that's not going to work out. But if you're married to, you know, a wife or a husband who's kind and gentle and respectful, there are going to come times, there are going to be times where it is quite literally going to be a choice, because that love, it ebbs and flows. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you feel it, sometimes you don't. I remember my mother telling me one time, during that period where they were thinking about divorce, she said, if your father died today, I'd have to peel an onion in order to cry. You know, she just could not stand the sight of him.
I will say, I will just add to this mix that I believe that we get married to fill a certain void, forgetting the love, the falling in love and all those chemicals. But ultimately, it fills the void, which my word for it is existential angst, just that feeling of having meaning, feeling mm-hmm. agitated that you don't have meaning, that space that is indigenous to being a human being. And that space gets filled for the first couple of years with all the excitement and the plans and the wedding and the romance, and it all gets filled up. And then ultimately, you reach the fork in the road in the marriage where you have to face your own darkness and your own demons. And your spouse can't face them for you, and nor can they fill it up. A lot of times,
exactly.
Get that feeling, and then we're mad at our spouse for not doing the job. And we resent it. And did I pick wrongly? And is this the wrong person? When ultimately that fork in the road is, you got to get it for yourself and fill that hole for yourself and not expect anyone else to do that job, my
exactly.
opinion.
Exactly. You know, you don't marry someone for them to make you happy or for them to make your life perfect. The road you take on life is fully dependent on the choices you make in life. You choose to stand by the commitment you made. You choose to be an adult and deal with whatever's going on with you internally and keep it from destroying that.
Well,
commitment.
We are, I have a question on divorce, but Jill and I are so enjoying talking about marriage. We're not used to this. Especially talk about the most dismal topics and painful topics you can imagine. So, you know, because time is running so fast, somebody who is involved with so many facets of divorce, I'd like to know what you think are some of the biggest mistakes people make in the divorcing process.
Anger, getting even. You know, divorce is not a unilateral decision. You've got couples, somebody's in love, somebody falls out of love, they leave. The person who's left behind, they're going to be angry, or else the person who leaves is going to be angry, because if you had been everything I thought you were, I would still be in love with you. So it's the anger and the inability to control that anger, or the willingness to allow that anger to dictate your behavior.
I agree with you. So you're talking about being reactive, being out of control of your emotions.
Mm-hmm.
And so what other mistakes do you, what other advice would you give for people going through the process to make sure they don't end up in a Smith and Wesson battle?
Mm-hmm. Interview your lawyer carefully. If you're sitting and talking to a lawyer and that lawyer tells you, we're going to take him to the cleaners, get up and walk out because the lawyer's going to cause problems.
Isn't that what some people want to hear?
Yes, and that's the problem. That's the people who are being driven by their anger, you know. So you have to look at it realistically. This is over. I have to accept it, and acceptance is the hardest place to get to, really.
I think it is, and I think for so many women who had a life where they were a homemaker, they didn't use their education or didn't complete their education, and they didn't know anything else. They feel so helpless and useless to society and don't know where to turn. And I think when you go to try to find a lawyer and try to end it in an angry way, it just prolongs the ability to reinvent. And
right.
You just carry that anger with you, and it makes you into a person that you don't want to be and never wanted to be, and you become very bitter and angry, and that's just not what should happen out of divorce.
Yeah, that's a good point, Jill, because you do reinvent. You will never be the same when your divorce is over, and you can reinvent yourself badly.
Yeah.
Very badly. And I tell women, you know, they want to talk about, oh, but he did this, he did that. And I tell them, he's not here right now doing anything. You know, but they want to hold on to that. And I think they hold on to it out of fear of moving forward.
Well, I would just add to that anger is a very empowering emotion. It has the whole surge of adrenaline. And when you're losing your entire life and everything you know, you want to feel strong about something, and people choose that as the wrong thing to feel strong about. But it does have a full effect, like a snort of cocaine. It has short-term durability, but it does feel empowering sometimes. And it's a gestation stage to give it up, is my opinion.
Well, yeah, and it can be healthy for us. You know, anger can spur you into protecting yourself emotionally and legally, but you can't go overboard with it. Anger, if you use that anger to protect yourself, great. But you can't use that anger to punish the other person.
Well said. So what else how do you know whether you resonate with the lawyer? That's a very, very difficult. I think people underestimate how difficult it is to go talk to a stranger about the secrets of your marriage. It's the first real time you feel like you're betraying your family.
Yes, it is. It is. I think just like with any other relationship, your relationship with your attorney is going to build over time. I tell my clients, the main thing you want in an attorney is someone who will be honest with you. You know, if you go to an attorney and he says, oh, yeah, we can get 75% of everything he owns, or we can get 75% of all marital assets, you're not going to have a good relationship with that attorney, because that attorney is going to disappoint you because he can't get 75%. So the first thing to look for is someone who's being realistic with you and telling you, you may get this, you may not get that. That's someone you're going to be able to build a relationship that's based on trust.
So when
and
you're,
only time is going to tell.
When you are a coach, you handle some of the emotional offload so that the person can save money and not offload all their emotional crisis on the lawyer?
Right, exactly. I was talking to an attorney yesterday that she's doing an interview with me on the 29th, And she said that, you know, in a perfect world, divorce attorneys, therapists, and coaches would be in business together, because that attorney's job is just that much more difficult, because he's got a client who's a ball of anxiety and emotional pain. So, you know, it prolongs the process, it drives the attorney insane, and nothing is being done for the client to help that client deal with the emotions and make smarter choices during the divorce process.
And lawyers aren't trained. We are trained to be analytical. We are trained to scan facts for what we can use. We are told to put analysis and the law on a pedestal, and yet people going through a divorce rightfully want that emotional comforting, don't know where else to get it, just lost it. This is why the coaches are so good, because it's an integral piece in what people need to heal.
It is. It really is. And I talked to a client yesterday, crying and sobbing. My lawyer's not in his office. He's on vacation for 2 weeks, and I need to talk to him. You know, my ex did this and he did that. And it's all emotional garbage and junk. And she's not going to court until the middle of January. And I told her, I said, you don't need your attorney. That's my job.
Right.
You come to me with these things. Let's clear the cobwebs out so that when you meet with your attorney, you're not, you know, all this stuff is dealt with.
I think when I know when I talk to people on the phone every day, all day long, they always want to tell the whole story from beginning to end. No matter how many times you've talked to them, they want to tell it to you again. And if I say once, I say 100 times a day, don't walk into a lawyer's office and tell this story again, because they've heard your story and you're wasting your own money.
You're wasting your own money. And you're putting yourself through the emotional process of telling the story again.
Right, right.
Doesn't need to be told.
What do you think is the formula for developing your attitude after divorce? What's that recipe?
I think that depends a lot on genetics and how you were raised. I will be honest with you. Some people don't have the ability to move on. They get stuck. They stay where they are. But it's about attitude. It's about pride. It's about a level of motivation. I can't let this destroy me. If you realize I've still got a life to live, and I've got two choices. I can sit here and wallow in it, or I can go out there and make a decent life for myself. And it's that simple. You have that conversation with yourself. Do I want to be this angry, bitter woman who's crying herself to sleep every night? Or do I want to get out and head down a path that's going to bring me joy and fulfillment?
Right. I absolutely agree with you. There are so many people that I talk to that I know will never be able to move on, that they want to live in that moment forever. And no matter how much cheerleading or coaching that you do, it doesn't make any difference.
It doesn't make any difference. It is, if you don't have the ability inside of you, you're not ever going to get there. I spoke with a 72-year-old woman who had been divorced for 33 years and had wasted her life, the only life she will ever have, and she had wasted her life on the fact that a man left her.
Well, I think this has been a really, really great show, and an hour flies by with you like no time at all.
I've had a great time.
I have too, and I know Michelle has.
I sure have. Wonderful. Kathy, you're a great guest, and you really, I think, what city are you doing this in?
I'm in Nashville, Tennessee.
Oh, nice. Well, they're lucky to have you down there.
And if you
Thank
go
you.
To KathyWmeyer.com, you can check out Kathy's rates for her coaching services. There, you do most of your coaching online, right, Kathy?
I do it via telephone and with email.
Okay, right. And if you're in the Nashville or close proximity area, you will do one-on-one?
Yes, I do.
And you have an online magazine. Tell us about that.
Well, actually, I'm not. I sold it. So I sold it to a company in Denmark. But I also, with my aside from my coaching business, I am the divorce expert for the About.com channel. So if you go to divorce support at About.com, that's me. I write the articles and manage the content there.
And you're also a blogger at the Huffington Post, and you're the digital
right.
content manager at the New York Times, and you're
right.
all over the place.
I'm busy, and I'm having a blast.
I'm so glad, and thank you for spending an hour with us tonight, and we look forward to having you again if you would do it.
I would love to do it. I'm so happy you asked me. I've really enjoyed myself.
Thank you, and take care, and keep up the great work. And everybody, the takeaway for tonight is living well is the best revenge.
Right, exactly.
For sure. Well, this
it was
is
nice
family.
Meeting you, Michelle.
Nice to meet you too, Kathy.
And we'll talk
Bye-bye.
To you soon. And everybody remember, November 14th, we do have Suzanne Venker, who is the author of How to Choose a Husband. So you want to make sure you tune in for that show. This is Family Matters. It's Judge Lawrence and Jill Ajizi signing off for tonight. We'll see you next time.
Bye,
Bye-bye.
Everybody.